Unbranded Podcast, and I'm your host, Susie Dean. I'm so grateful to have you on this journey with me. And by journey, it's a journey of self-discovery, of learning about others, reigniting the passions I've long had but never had the time to dive into until now. If you're here, I'm sure you also have an interest in plant magic, living in alignment with nature, spirituality, and the magic that surrounds us that we don't see but works constantly in our lives. And I'm sure you also consider yourself a little bit woo-woo. So sit crisscross applesauce, cleanse your space, set up your diffuser with some oils that uplift you, and enjoy while we have interesting conversations with interesting people on Unbranded with Susie Dean. This is a long-awaited and truly a manifestation of a podcast that we have today with none other than Evie Moyer. I'm so excited about it. Many of you who follow me are likely to also follow Evie. In fact, when I posted that I had just finished my podcast with her, I got a flood of messages saying, oh my God, I follow her and I love her. This is going to be so great. I can't wait. So if you don't know her, she's a very natural, holistically minded Christian and kind of woo-woo mama like me, living in Hawaii with her husband and two sons. And she is beautifully knowledgeable in hormone health, cycle syncing, nutrition, and is honestly sharing her journey as a postpartum mother and navigating many of the challenges that brings, such as body image, which you guys know is something that I've always struggled with. And so I deeply appreciate her for that. But before I go any further, we do have a part two of this episode coming. This conversation in particular is all about pregnancy and birth, comparing her two experiences, my questions around having a second child, taking away the fear of birth, and highlighting the beauty of home birth. Though, if you do choose to birth in a hospital, we think that is dope as hell. I want to make that clear. If pregnancy conversations aren't your jam, go ahead and skip this one. But if you're anything like us, you'll love. And we should have known that starting our conversation with the topic of pregnancy would result in an episode all on its own, but it's fine. We've got part two coming and on the calendar. In our next conversation, we'll be talking a lot more about her lifestyle, rediscovering the feminine, and the balance between Christianity and our more woo-woo practices. So make sure to subscribe to this podcast to get notified when that one comes out. Enjoy! I was looking the other day back through my, I was looking at like last year's, like a year ago on my camera roll. And Kenza, my oldest, is just like a different person, like in the best of ways. But like the amount of growth that's happened in this past year is insane. And there's this weird feeling in motherhood of like, oh, I miss that version of them. And I don't know if my husband, like I try to explain it to my husband, he's like, oh, good, like he's the same kid and he's so great now. I'm like, yes, but like there's a two-year-old Kenza that I really miss, and then I miss the one-year-old Kenza and the baby, you know.
It's also so true that like, but every phase just keeps getting better.
I know.
Like, I don't know. I look at pictures of Hawthorne and just like the newborn scrunches.
Wait, Hawthorne?
Yeah.
That is the cutest name.
Oh, God.
Thorny for short?
No, not yet. I was an English teacher, so he's named after Nathaniel Hawthorne. But he's named after Nathaniel Hawthorne, and our last name is Lyons. So we were like, Hawthorne Lyons? That's a powerful name. I look at pictures of him with the little scrunchie, and then and the newborn when you're like...
Oh, the kissy face. Yes.
And I see newborns out in public. I'm like, don't show me. I will become pregnant immediately.
I know. I already feel that way again with Zimri. He's 3 months old and he's already getting so big. And I'm like, no, please. He rolled over for the first time yesterday. Just like pop, boop, by himself. And I was like, wait. I am not ready for milestones. I haven't prepared for this. I don't have a baby book. Like,
what are you doing?
And I think it's something that you kind of, I think especially with
Kenza, like with your first, I don't know, sometimes you're so like, oh my God, everything is so new and you're so in it that like you almost don't fully experience it in the same. I feel like it's just all like a whirlwind in so many ways. And then you're like hoping and waiting for the next milestone and the next thing. And then before you know it, you're like, wait, what happened? They grew up. And I feel like with this second time around, I've been able to be somewhat more present because there's less like shock factor. Also, it wasn't like a preterm labor or whatever, literal shock factor, but like able to be so much more present and feeling a lot more like enjoying the phase that he's in because I'm so much more aware of like the fact that it is fleeting.
If I'm not mistaken, this whole pregnancy and postpartum has been radically different for you.
Radically. Yes.
So you've implemented a few things to take care of yourself more that will allow you to be more present.
Fantastic segue, Susie.
So now tell me everything that you've implemented with this pregnancy. Like, I want to know, I love, and you're the same way, I'm sure, I love talking about birth and pregnancy. I love talking about all of the gross stuff. Like, I asked all my friends for pictures of their placenta. I got one. And they've all had multiple kids. And so I'm all about that. I plan to have a home birth. Unfortunately, it didn't happen that way. So your redemptive birth story is really important to me. And I can't wait to hear it. Was Kenza a intentional conception?
No.
Oh, okay. What about Zimri?
Medium. We're like, let's start thinking about having a baby. And then we're like, yeah, and then we can do it, you know?
But you know your cycle. So it wasn't that, like, you knew you were ovulating.
I was like, yeah, babe, I want to start doing the natural cycle family planning thing. And I'm just going to know when I'm ovulating. I'm going to blah, blah, blah. But I didn't, like, actually start doing the, I wasn't actually doing the thermometer and writing everything down every morning because I was like, that's lame. I'll just wing it. And I just winged it too. I wung it too hard for a second. And then I was like, oh, yeah, we're fine. It's fine. We're totally fine. And then immediately after, I was like, you know what? I think I am ovulating, like right now, like probably today, which would make sense why I was like, yeah, let's just, it's fine. Let's just go for it. So we were like open to the idea, but we had like just said that we're like open to the idea, you know? And then boom, I guess the cycle syncing worked and I was fertile myrtle. And yeah.
Okay. Now, pregnancy, yeah. What changes did you make? And then postpartum, what changes did you make?
Like from last time?
Yes.
Okay. Well, interesting. Like a lot, but also, okay, backstory, rewind. When I got pregnant with Kenza, then I'm like, wait, rewind farther. I have a fairly good foundation for like healthy, the basics of healthy lifestyle from my mother, right? My mom and dad. Very much so, but also very much the, you know, the basic. And then I grew up and I was like, ew, mom, stop trying to feed me kefir. What is this stuff that you're making in the cupboard? And then I I became a teen. I started treating my body just like terribly. I mostly cared about whether I was skinny or not whether I was healthy. You know, I was vegan for a while, but really it was just an excuse to like not eat as many types of foods as possible. So I just ate chips and hummus and like fruit. I had like this foundation for like healthy living, but then I grew habits that were like very, very unhealthy, very detrimental to my metabolic health, my hormone health, my like gut health, everything through eating disorders, through drug use and like partying and all kinds. By the time I got pregnant with Kenza, which forgive me, I am terrible at dates, ages, etc. I think I was like, let's just say 28. I was just not very well. I knew a lot about health and I had been like gluten-free, dairy-free, whatever for years and stuff. But I was like definitely underweight for my size. I was chronically super, super stressed and anxious, had been deeply depressed for a very long time, had just gone through one of the worst seasons of my life full of just like a lot of pain. It was just a lot of emotional pain, which was also manifesting in physical ways. And I was just not treating my body well at all. Then I got pregnant with Kenza, and I very quickly, like, I was in therapy and stuff around that time, and I very quickly realized, like, I can't do this. Like, I can't pass on these, my issues to my baby, whether it's through physically, through me being depleted and, like, not giving them what they need, which, side note, baby will take what they need from your body. Mm-hmm. You'll just end up really, really sick and depleted postpartum. Wait, lost my train of thought. You were listening so intently, I lost myself in your eyes for a moment. I quickly recognized that not only physically, but also mentally and emotionally, I would pass things to my baby and I had to get a handle on it because I had been very ruled by anxiety, fears, emotions for a long time. And what do you know? Those things are very connected to your health, to your hormones, to your wellness in general. So that pregnancy was very much focused on survival and, like, just feeding my body. So while I did well in essence, and it was, like, generally balanced and whatever, there was so much that I still hadn't delved into and still wasn't really in the habit of in terms of, like, the deep wellness, like, nourishment and those kind of habits of it. So while it wasn't like I was, you know, eating McDonald's every day and whatever, I was, like, doing CrossFit workouts and I was eating, feeding myself, but low-key the CrossFit workouts may have been a little much. So then fast forward to the second pregnancy, which is 3 years later, almost. I think my son was about 2.5 when we conceived Zimri. I had a very slow recovery from Kenza because I did not want to bounce back. I didn't want to step back into any negative cycles with eating and things like that, even though I gained so much weight during pregnancy because my body was like, you too? Yeah. Because my body was like, finally, she's feeding us, you know, and it just clung on to all of this weight. And postpartum, I gained weight breastfeeding. I have again this time, but I didn't experience a lot of negative postpartum physical symptoms. So that's interesting. So I had a very slow recovery and was just really starting to feel myself again. I had been cycle syncing for a couple of years. My cycles had gone from horrible and painful and horrific to, like, very almost nice, like very calm and easy. So that was the foundation from which I started my second pregnancy. A lot more focus around, yeah, like eating for hormone support and balance, which, interesting, I found difficult when it came to pregnancy because there's not a lot of research, I think, on, like, what, on, like, how to support your hormones during pregnancy necessarily. Because they change all over, they go all over the place. I guess there is research on it, but I was like, I wish that there was more. I wish that there was something I could hold on to more in terms of, like, what are your hormones supposed to be doing? What if they were imbalanced before pregnancy and you want to, like, support them to be balanced? Like, what is it supposed to look like? Anyways, I just focused a lot on, like, tons and tons of minerals, getting enough protein, not being afraid of any food groups, but also having balance. So, you know, rather than trying to avoid, like, the more simple carbs, you know, like white sugars and flours and whatever, trying to eat complex carbs, I did a lot of research actually into the trimesters and what your body is doing and what your baby is developing and what nutrients you need for those. And so that was actually really fun. It was kind of like my hyper focus during the time. I did actually end up making, like, a bunch of little, I might make a little ebook. I don't know. I made a bunch of little downloads for, like, pregnancy trimesters and postpartum with, like, original artwork on them and whatever for people to use for, like, eating and whatever. And I still haven't done anything with them because I got the ick. I was like, I don't know why. I was like, I know that she has, like, the phone screensavers for parts of her cycle. I didn't know she had this for pregnancy. And I was like, I'm so embarrassed that I didn't know this. I released them. No. I know. Sorry. I totally respect where you are at emotionally with those. No, I'm actually about to. There was, like, a couple details that needed completing with them. And I've procrastinated so long. And then I get the ick. Like, if I don't complete and release a project when I'm, like, in the middle of inspiration for it, I'm like, this is lame. Nobody wants this. I don't know.
I'm in that place, too. So I'm glad I'm not the only one.
You're not the only one.
Release it when you're ovulating. Have you gotten your period back yet?
Probably not. I just did. I just got my first back. Yeah.
It's so dumb when we get it back. Well, yes. Celebration. But also, I talk to people and they're like, it's been 8 months and I still haven't gotten my period back.
And I'm like, are you serious?
Okay.
Yeah, I think also the second pregnancy, I was a lot more focused on nourishing and like loving my body and on like cortisol balance and things like that. I was, you could say, under a lot of stress. Like I was ramping up a lot with kind of work with social media and photography stuff, had, you know, a toddler at home. My husband was still working 5 days a week, an hour away, you know, just long days. And I actually was a lot more like sick during this first trimester and a half of this pregnancy. Felt really, really rough. That was challenging. And so I focused a lot more on like being kind to my body. I wasn't stressed about like working out a ton. I was trying to move. I was trying to be in nature when I could. I was trying to stretch. I was trying to meditate. I was playing more of like the mind game with it, especially in preparation for birth. I wasn't thinking so much like, I need to do squats to be prepared for labor. I was like, I need to learn how to calm my mind and relax all my muscles to prepare for labor. Yeah, what was the question again? Am I on track? So on track. I wanted to know what you were doing differently between your first and second. What I'm hearing is when you got pregnant with Kensa, your mind and body were in a space of like catching up. Like,
yep.
You had spent so much time not treating your body well. You were still playing catch up with trying to get it back to a baseline, which is a challenge to do while you're pregnant because, like you said, your body's going to take it what it needs. So you have to do even more. And then with Zimri, you were already at that baseline for the most part. You had mostly learned from, I mean, I don't think we can ever completely heal from those eating disorder behaviors and thoughts. But at this ground, you had gotten to a really good space with loving your body and working with your hormones and feeding your body and treating your body as an ally is what I say. Which,
yes, love that.
Was a big change with the two pregnancies. I think that really was it. And yeah, in general, like more of an embracing of the miracle of pregnancy and not trying to treat it as like, oh no, I'm pregnant. I have to make sure I try and stay skinny. I have to make sure I try and, but just like letting it happen. It sounds like you come from a natural background. I know your mom had because I've stalked the shit out of you. I know your mom had what, 7 home births? I think
the first was a hospital birth, maybe.
Okay. With your first pregnancy, with your natural background, did you fight? There's a lot of fear around birth.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to talk about that. I was lucky to be surrounded by a lot of moms who were very much like, of course I'm going to eat lunch meat. I literally only survive on subs. Or another mom that was like, I had poke bowls all the time. They were so good. And I was fine. Or, yes, I still take baths. Or I found out you're not supposed to eat honey while you're pregnant. And I'm like, all of these rules just make us so much more stressed out about the health of the baby, which is not feeding our baby well. Right. And did you fall into that with your first pregnancy? Because I know you definitely didn't with your second.
Yeah, definitely not with the second.
Honestly, no.
Good.
I think there was maybe a couple of things here or there, but like I think because I have seen pregnancy be very much not pathologized, is that the word? Like not seen as like a scary, kind of dangerous disease thing through my mom, but also just through a lot of other women that I've been thankful to know. So I think I had that just foundation of an assumption that like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Like, if nothing's wrong, you're fine. At first, I was going to an OBGYN. I birthed at a birthing center that was like an hour away. And my checkups were very brief and like very, like, honestly, like shockingly brief and minimal. And they would always be like, do you have any questions? And I'm like, I don't know. And I feel like they didn't like lead with like, don't do this, don't do this, do that, blah, blah, blah. They might have given me some leaflets or something that I like, you know? So like, it wasn't like I was being bombarded with a lot of those ideas. And I also was thankful to be working at a coffee shop with a really sweet friend who was a midwife. And we talked a lot about different things. And she was a very natural midwife. She did herbs and all kinds of stuff as well. She has a cute little apothecary. It's called Bloom and Revive. You can find her on Instagram. Yeah, so I think that also helped ease my mind. Often I would just talk to her. I'd be like, Danny, like, what about this? What do you think about that? What about these herbs? And she had worked with so many mamas that, like, that was reassuring to me. In general, I've always found that, like, I trust old wisdom sometimes more than new wisdom. And there's a place for both, right? So, but I think if you take into account, like, if you're do some good research on, like, what does the science say? And if the science says, like, oh, like for ashwagandha, like the science says probably shouldn't do it during pregnancy. But then also the old research says a lot of cultures have used ashwagandha for as an abortificant, as an abortive thing, right? Et cetera, et cetera. So you put the things together, you're like, eh, probably shouldn't take ashwagandha. If you're looking and the modern scientific research says there's not enough research, so don't do it. And then the traditional says, actually, this has been used traditionally for hundreds and thousands of years in all kinds of cultures everywhere for pregnant women. Then I would trust that rather than Google that says, just don't do it because we don't know, because nobody wants to research on pregnant women. I get it. But yeah. I mean, like, we just don't have the research in a lot of things. And then the flip side of it is, yeah, there's dangers everywhere in different ways. But I realized after researching, you can get listeria just as easily from a pack of shredded cheese, from pre-prepped lettuce products. There's been multiple listeria outbreaks. Like I got a Costco pack of these like prepped tacos one day, and then found out like a day later that they had been recalled because of listeria. Yeah. Fuck. I was like, are you serious? I'm gonna die. And so I was like, okay, so the problem isn't eating some lunch meat necessarily. The problem is like prepackaged foods in general. And it can just as easily be lettuce as anything else. And then it's like, oh, ice cream. Oh, this. And you just cannot live your life avoiding absolutely every single thing that could possibly cause a problem. Like, you can't do that. I didn't eat like sweaty brie or like, you know, salami that had been sitting out on a deli counter for forever. But yeah, I ate like baked chicken, turkey breast, you know, whatever, like nitrite free applegate, blah, blah, blah. Like, I trust it.
I know. Well, were you present on social media during your first pregnancy as much as you are now? Okay. So yeah,
I was off social media pretty much my whole first pregnancy.
That sounds delightful. A lot of the noise for me, that must have been a blessing for you, because a lot of the noise for me came from being on social media while I was pregnant. Yeah. And I just stopped posting about what I was eating. But I recall even recently someone had posted on their feed like dates at the end of pregnancy. I'm so sick of eating them. What are ways to change it up? And I was like, fill it with goat cheese, wrap it in prosciutto and make it a little appetizer. And then people were commenting, like, why would you recommend a soft cheese? And did you only opt for prosciutto because it's like salt cured and technically like cooked? And I'm like, I didn't even engage. But there's so much when it comes to social media with wanting pregnant women to be in a state of fear, and it's not necessary. And it takes away from embracing the beauty of pregnancy and the excitement of it.
Yeah. No, I absolutely agree. And the thing is you can research till you're blue in the face. And it's kind of like with anything, you can find whatever answers you want for anything, basically.
Yes. Yes. You know?
But you're ultimately going to waste time, energy, and like precious peace doing so. I did research soft cheeses. I could go on a whole ramble about soft cheeses if you want. I did it for a TikTok. But the long and short of it is that, like, actually the rules and regulations here in the States make it almost impossible for the conditions for the cheese in which listeria would even grow. It's like the regulations around it. And it's not the same in France. If you went over to Europe, don't eat their soft cheese because it's actually unpasteurized. It actually sits out. It actually ages for X amount of time, etc. And so I think even French women who are very lax with pregnancy rules, I think they tend to avoid some specific soft cheeses. But I'm sorry, I ate feta and goat cheese like all through my pregnancy. I loved it.
Now moving topics a little bit, I ask this of every woman that has multiple kids.
You have lots of siblings. I have zero.
Wow.
My husband comes from a family probably very similar to yours. He has four older siblings, and not all of the births were natural, but it was a very holistic, like they were using essential oils for sickness since they were little babies. So he has that background. I have a very different background. And as we consider having another baby, I'm like, I know I want one. I know I want one. But there's a lot of fear. I had a very, very, very stressful, very depressed pregnancy. My labor was 4 days at home, which was dope. I love laboring at home. We're going to talk about that later. But then I went to the hospital, and there's like, and then I had a C-section, and there's just like this very sad, it's just like the antithesis of everything I wanted, sad picture of breastfeeding Hawthorne for the very first time. And I had to have a mask on, and he couldn't see my, and I was connected to all of these wires trying to maneuver him onto my boob. I'm under bright lights. There are people all around me. And it was just, so there's that fear. And then there's also being an only child, and I know my heart will grow. I know I will love my second, but I also fear I'm going to lose time with my first naturally, because my time's going to be divided. So I want to ask you, as someone who grew up with siblings, can you talk, just for my own selfish reasons, talk about why maybe it was important to you to have multiple kids, and like the gift of siblings, and also what the experience has been like with having two? Like, has Kenza been like, oh my God, I'm a big brother, I can help? Has there been jealousy? How have you been with navigating both? I want to know that experience.
Yeah. Okay, well, first, can I digress and say, one, I'm so, so sorry that you had that experience that deviated from what you really hoped for. And I understand a bit of that pain with having like a preterm birth and NICU experience and all of that. Two, when you said the sad picture of you breastfeeding for the first time with the lights and the wires and whatever, like I actually really got this feeling of like, that is beautiful though. Because even amidst like so much going on, so much struggle and like extremity to birth your baby, you are still there, connecting skin to skin, doing what women have done for millennia with their babies. Like that is the same, and that like cuts through all the noise of everything that was going on around you. I had to wear a mask too when I was but it's beautiful actually, because your breastfeeding in that moment and connecting in that way like supersedes everything else, and is like a bit of a middle figure to, you know, to like to the man and to the all the shit that you had to go through to get there. So just want to encourage you with that. You know, we also really felt for a while like we may not want to have a second child, because we just loved Kenzie so much. We were like, he's so perfect. How can we top this? Can we handle a second kid? Because it's already a lot. XYZ. But I pretty much was certain that I didn't want to have an only child. No offense.
My mom always raised me like, I wish I had given you siblings. She wasn't able to. So
hard for her. Yeah. No, I loved growing up with siblings. And I felt that, especially as we saw him getting older, like around two, we saw the need for siblings. Like I was like, I cannot play with you the way that you want to be played with. I'm not supposed to. I listened to Hunt Gather Parent. I say read, but I can't read these days. I listened to it. And a lot of it talks about, you know, the modern parenting, modern Western parenting is so like child focused in like a negative way, almost. Like you can't revolve your days and your world around your child. It's not good for you. It's not good for them. It ends up with frustrated and burnt out parents. It ends up with children that don't really know how to interact in the real world. Ultimately, children really enjoy doing tasks alongside adults, learning things independently, having their own imaginative play, which we often can't like live up to. So while it is good and important, to have times of connection and play with your child. And I think the book says don't do it at all. I disagree with that. Like, I love getting on his level and playing with him when I can, but a couple 10-15 minute stints in a day is great. You know, the rest of the time it's like, join me in this, do this with me. But he does need people of his, like, peers that he can play with and be with. And in the old school, like, village system, kids all had peers, and they would, even in like small towns or whatever, you know, run down the street to play with whoever and blah blah blah. I think it's really necessary, not just for my sanity, but for his and for his fullness of life, you know? And so I did really sense that. And I was really concerned about the idea of like, oh, will my heart grow? Will I have enough love? And there's, of course, a change. Like, we went through postpartum and I really, really took 6 weeks to recover very slowly and was in bed a lot and whatever else. And that was difficult. I cried often at having to say no to my son. And about the times that I couldn't pick him up because he was too heavy in the early days and all these things. But he loves his little brother so, so much. They've just started interacting where, like, Zimri is laughing at things that Kenza does, and Kenza loves it. He thinks it's so cool. He gives him things like, oh, I had this when I was a baby. I'm going to give it to Zimri now. Anytime Zimri's crying, he's like, I'm coming, I'm coming. And he runs to Zimri. Sometimes to Zimri's detriment, because I'm like, no, 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 he's just going back to sleep, you know, like, no. But he loves him. And I think he was really made to be a big bro. Ultimately, yes, our roles change slightly, and we will always have this really, really precious time that we got to have of just us one-on-one. And I'm actually sad that Zimri doesn't get that a little bit. He doesn't get like a couple of years where I get to really, really focus in on him. But I think that the exchange is worth it for both of them. And often what I think about, and what Kendreas and I started to think about, was like the future. We started to think about like holidays in the future, like Thanksgiving and Christmas. When you think about that, it's kind of like more the merrier, you know? And in the early days, it's a lot. And then I feel like the older that they get, the more beautiful it becomes for them. And then as they grow into like teens and 20s, they have these friendships, ideally, if you cultivate their siblingship well, they have these friendships that can last them through the years. And then when you gather together, there's this like celebration, like this host of people all coming together, rather than like two old people and a dude sitting at a table, you know? And that's what I really thought about. I was like, man, I really want to like have those full times in the future. And I will admit that there's been some struggle with the adjustment, but we're moving through it now and it's getting like increasingly better as we go. It really is.
For any mothers that are also in the same boat that I am, can you assure us that your heart and your love does grow?
Oh my gosh. The way that I love Zimri is like, it's embarrassing sometimes. It's bad. And I remember feeling the same way about Kenza. Yeah. Just like, oh, I love you so much. I just can't prove it. I just want to like,
yeah, put you back in. But then I can't hang out with you anymore.
But yeah, exactly. Then I can't. And there's actually, if anything, being completely honest, and I think that this is probably a lot to do with like hormones and the postpartum like bonding thing. There's been times where I've been more like, I want space alone with just this baby. Like, I love this baby so much. Leave me alone. And sometimes I've felt bad about that, because sometimes I've found I'm moving through this now, but especially during postpartum, there were times where I was like, I don't want to play with Kenza. Like, I don't want to, like, I wanted to snuggle him. I wanted to hug him. I still loved him so, so much. But there was this sort of primal feeling in me that I was like, no, I just want time with this baby to like bond, I guess. And I think that's probably necessary to an extent. But sometimes it frustrated me as well and made me a little bit sad that I was having those feelings. But it also was a little bit reassuring, like, wow, I love this baby so strongly that I feel like protective over my time with this baby. And that I really like have this urge to like bond just with them and like be in our little bubble. And I was kind of surprised by that. And it almost sounds like a negative, but it's not, because I do really think that it's like just like a necessary little part of those kind of early days. Thankfully, you know, Kendreas is home full time. He quit his job in December.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Yeah, in anticipation of this season, he was working a really like soul-sucking job an hour away, and it was a lot, and I was making more money than he was anyway. And, you know, we just figured it made more sense. And so Kenza still had love, you know, he still had plenty of attention and affection, and it was different. And he went through a little phase of like acting out a little bit. But as I've come out of postpartum and come back into more day-to-day interactions and like really making sure that I get some focus time with Kenza every single day, all of that has begun to balance out really nicely. And now there's just these moments where I just look at like Kenza and he's playing and Zimri's next to him in his little chair and my husband's like hanging out, like I see them all, like the little family picture, and it just like fills my heart with so much joy. Like they had a bath together last night for the first time, the boys. Yeah. And it was just the cutest thing. And I remember having baths with my siblings when I was little. It just feels very full circle to be able to make those memories for my kids as well.
At that age, did Kenza understand what was happening when you were like about to give birth?
Yeah, he really did.
Okay, good.
He really did. And we talked about it a lot. And I think it helped that recently there had been people that he'd known who were pregnant and then had babies. And so we talked about baby in their belly and whatever else. And then now look, here's a baby. But then we showed him photos of him as a baby and me when I was pregnant with him. Look, you were in my belly, just like this baby's in my belly now. And like, there you are as a baby, just like this is going to be a baby. We looked at some of those animated things on YouTube that show like the baby growing in a belly. I think that he watched like a couple of like birth story things with me on YouTube. Like I'm sure he didn't pay attention to the whole thing, but you know. And yeah, we just talked about it a lot. I was reading a book. It was I was reading Anna Mae Gaskin's Guide to Childbirth. And I've never read the full thing, but both pregnancies I've like looked through the birth stories and different parts of it, you know. Great book. And I was on one page that I had a couple of fantastic black and white photos of a very 70s birth setting. And of course, Kenza's like, what is that? And literally the photo on that page was like a baby's head out of like crown, like coming out of a vagina. And I was like, and my first instinct was to like, oh, nothing. But I was like, actually, this is totally normal. And it was black and white. So there wasn't like blood or anything. And there was a lot of 70s bush around. That seemed kind of like a little modesty cover, you know? And I shot it. I was like, this is a baby being born. Like how there's a baby in my belly and it comes out of the mom's vagina. And I just literally like talked to him about it, very matter of fact. And I think at this age is a great time for that because there's no embarrassment. It's just matter of fact. Someone said to him recently, like, oh, the baby came out of your mommy's belly. He was like, no, he came out of mom's vagina. And I was like, you go, mom. And you go, Kenza.
That's incredible. I love that.
Yeah. So we did a lot to really try and help him understand what was happening. And then he was here while I was giving birth, which was great. Initially, we were going to have somebody come and pick him up. And I'm really glad that we didn't because he wasn't like in the room while I was physically giving birth. But like moments after Zimri was born, like in the tub, he came in and my niece was here too. She's like, I think she's 8. She was here with my sister and my sister was just helping with all the like whatever I needed. And they came in like literally moments after he was born. And Kenza's face is like the most precious thing I've ever seen.
Are you someone who births? Can you birth? Okay, so you said your first birth was in a birth house. Or a birthing center, even though it was preterm. Is that scandalous?
I don't know. I mean, it's like it was a birthing center that's like attached to a hospital. So it was a very kind of hospitalized. They had midwives and OBGYNs and they had to have an OB attend every birth. So it was kind of like birthing center, but like, okay.
Did you find like what kind of laboring woman are you?
I mean, apparently a pretty chill one, I guess. Let's see.
I'm fine with people milling about.
Let me see. Because I labored at home for 2 days with my first. I was very much in denial that I was in labor. We drove the hour to get checked after the first day and night of labor being up all night. And the doctor literally took one look at me. He was like, oh, you're smiling. You're not in labor. And they hooked me up to check me. And because I didn't get like whatever, they slowed way down, of course, when I went to hospital. Contractions slowed way down. And so he was like, oh, I didn't see any. And then you're not in labor, whatever. And then the nurse was like, oh, your thing wasn't on right, like my monitor on my belly. And so she adjusted it, and then they picked up some contractions. And he was like, oh, I guess we did. It's whatever. Come back if you're getting more than 4 in an hour. And I was like, dude, I've been getting more than that all night long. Whatever. So we went all the way home. And then I didn't want to drive another hour to be like turned around again. I was like, this is prodromal labor. It's not real, whatever. So I was like, it was my husband's birthday. I was making him a cake and making it. We went to my brother's house. We had burgers. Everyone was timing me. They're like, are you sure you're not? They're like, you can't talk anymore during a, are you okay? So I got to the hospital. I got to the hospital 3 hours before he was born.
Oh.
And they were kind of like, there was a lot of hustle bustle because he was early. But at that point, there was like, we were past the point of no return. Like, we were in a transition vibes, you know, like it wasn't gonna really slow down at that point. Everyone was kind of in the room. And then they were like, oh, because when I got there, they were like, oh, you're 100% effaced in like 7 centimeters. Like, when I got to the hospital, and we were like, what? And then, yeah, not long later, they're like, okay, you can push now. And I was like, I don't want to push. And the doctor's okay. Like, okay, fine. And everyone left the room. And then, like, minutes after everybody left the room, I was like, I don't want to push. So I think that everybody prefers to birth. Like, I think physiologically, you need space to birth. And in fact, this time, I was hanging out. My sister was here. The midwife was here. Kenza, like, there was a lot of hustle bustle. And I was laboring, and it was going kind of slowly. My contractions, it seems like, are just weird. Just like with Kenza, they're like short, long, short, 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 short. Yeah. Like all over the place, not like a steady, like, decrease in time between them. It was kind of, you know, mixed bag. And so I was doing a lot of, like, I don't know, I walked around outside and all kinds of stuff for a long time. And then they're starting to get, like, somewhat stronger, but my midwife, I guess, said to my sister, like, yeah, we'll probably be here till midnight. It'll probably be like a midnight birth. This was in the morning at like 10 a.m. Maybe noon, I don't know. And he was born at 5 p.m.
Wow.
So around noon, my midwife was like, I don't know, I think it's gonna take her quite a long time, blah, blah, blah. We walked around outside, and then it started to get like more intense. I could tell my whole birth story right now, so I'll hold back a little. But there was this point where we went inside, and I finally like was like, I feel like I just need to go back to the birthing room. Like, we had set up like our spare room up and all of this for birthing, and it had like a bed in there and stuff. And I was like, I feel like I just need to go back there. And in my mind, I was like, maybe I'll watch a show like on my iPad or something. Very quickly, I realized like, I don't want to watch a show. I was very like suddenly like in, I was back there for a few minutes by myself, and then I was very much like in a zone. And then things progressed really quickly. And it turns out my midwife had said, everybody, like when I went back there, she was like, nobody go back there. Everybody leave her alone. She needs at least like 10 or 15 minutes. She said, there's something that happens around this point in labor when a woman is left alone. There's certain hormones that kick in and tend to cause things to progress a lot faster. And it literally happened, because before then it was kind of like, yeah, you're fully in labor, but it's just going a little slow. And I was like, maybe I'll have a snack and watch a show. And then like, she left me alone, and I was like,
yeah.
It like kicked into another gear.
Yeah.
And then from there was like fairly swift.
Amazing.
Amazing.
That was obviously, yeah, they say the second is quicker anyway, but that was obviously a very different experience than the first one. And I asked because it was only you never know what kind of laboring woman you're going to be. And I kept stalling, and I also had very odd contractions. Mm-hmm. And it was supposed to be just me, my husband, and my doula, but and then my parents ended up staying, and they were like very scared of home birth. So there was like this kind of negativity from,
yeah.
And then there was the constant presence of my doula, and when I was left alone overnight, like, I wasn't sleeping. I was sleep deprived. I was hallucinating in between contractions. And then as soon as my doula arrived, stopped. And we quickly realized in retrospect, like, I needed to be alone and not serving anyone else. And just every night when everyone left, it was like, well, what do they say when you, it was like every 2 minutes. And then people would come and it would stop. And we were like, what do we do? So
yeah,
I appreciate that you validate the importance of a woman being completely alone, because yes, we know that that primal nature of us isn't going to birth unless we know that we're in a completely safe space.
Yeah.
And that can often only be done when we feel like we don't have to serve others, and yeah, we're picking up it on and absorbing the energy of others, even if it is positive energy. Like that's gonna interfere with our laboring mindset, which of course is imperative when you're birthing at home.
Totally. And I think even there's like a subconscious like serving, quote unquote, through like not being weird, you know, like not.
Yeah.
I don't know. Just like sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes, especially towards the end, neither time did I like really like scream or anything during labor. But this second time I was a lot more vocal towards the end. And I found it a great release of energy and a great way to like continue to like move through my my contractions with like release,
yeah,
and with tensing. I found that like vocalizing did really help, and everyone was in the house still, they just weren't all like present with me the whole time. And I did sometimes have a thought, like I had these thoughts come up sometimes about embarrassment, and I had to just like, I was like, no, F that, you cannot be embarrassed, you have to just go and do this. But I will also say yes to the being very safe and being alone, but also I personally feel that birth is like a communal thing.
Yeah,
I have a lot of friends who have free birth, and I'm not gonna say that I'm against that at all, because they've had great experiences with that. I do, like, I personally feel like it is wise to have somebody there with a little bit extra knowledge than you, because even if you've studied everything, if there are complications, having somebody that is impartial, and just like a third party or just another set of hands, you know, I think is wise, even if you have them like stay away, like, and ignore you unless there's an issue. That aside, though, I feel like birth has been something traditionally that has been supported by the female community. There has been, usually in a village, there's some like elder woman who would go to all the births, and she knew all the stuff, and she knew the herbs and whatever else. And there would be aunties and sisters and people supporting, not just through pregnancy and birth, but also postpartum. So it did feel really right in a way to have like my sister there and my son around, to have a midwife, to have my husband. But there was just a time where I was like, yeah, I need to be alone for a minute. But actually, even in that time, it wasn't very long before I was like, okay, I want my husband with me.
Exactly.
But I wanted him there, but in a very supportive way. And I told him before, he already was good from the first. We did doula classes and whatever. He was great. And then I told him even more specifically the second time around. And even halfway through labor, I was like, this is what I want you to do. When you see my body tensing up, just touch the place. If I'm tensing my forehead, I want you to rub my forehead, or at least just touch it. Keep reminding me to relax. I want you to rub my, I told him specifically, this is what I want you to do. And then he did it, which was great. So the like end of labor, he was very much present, and I wanted him with me the whole time. And I wanted to relax onto him. I wanted, when a contraction came, I wanted to hold onto him, to release my body onto him. He was working hard. He was holding me up. And I just did.
The husband, like,
he was great.
Yeah.
The husbands, honestly, are like, a good husband in labor is really a gift. And my midwife as well was amazing, because she knew when to step back.
Yeah.
And she also knew when to not. She picked up very much on my energy. I had told her anyway, like, I like encouragement. I like verbal encouragement. I need that. And so she was. She was very, she would be like, open, release. And it was great. And then sometimes she said things like, you're Elastigirl, your vagina is like a giant rubber band and just elastic. And it was great. I was there for all of it, you know. But she also was really good at stepping back when Kondreas was supporting, you know, and knowing. And then when he wasn't for a minute, I would just call her if I needed her, and she would come right up, you know. So I think that there is really value to having that communal aspect of support, but just them knowing or you being comfortable to tell them, like, hey, I just need a minute. I just need a minute.
It sounds like during the laboring process, there was that moment where you were alone, and that's what really kicked, like, told your body, okay, I'm safe, I'm in the zone, so that when you started meeting people coming in, you were no longer in a place where you felt unsafe. Like, it had started, it had gone to the place of no return.
Yeah, exactly.
Your body had established that you were safe, and then the community could come in and support you.
Totally. I was also at that point, I stayed in the birthing room that we had created. And like initially when we decided to home birth, I was like, I don't know if I can home birth in this house. I just don't know. It's a rental. I don't like it. The back rooms are tiny. Like, I don't know how. I was just like feeling off about it. So I put a lot of work into making our little spare room like a nice birthing room. And we had like a tub in there that actually a friend of mine lent me that was like a jacuzzi tub from Costco.
Nice.
Really nice. And so I had spent some nights in there previously, like sitting in the jacuzzi tub, which my midwife said was fine as long as it wasn't over like 100 degrees or whatever. And like reading some of my birth books and just kind of hanging out in the space. I had like some affirmation cards up and some just different tokens of like things, you know, around. So that space ended up feeling very safe and very much like the birthing space. Like, it was kind of darker. There was just like one window in the room. You know what I mean? Like, it was in the back of the house. So like earlier in labor, I was very much in the living room, outside, around, whatever. And I kind of had like a little bit of a more disjointed energy. I was just doing stuff, which I think is good early labor. I was like, you know, just keeping busy. And then there hit a point where I was like, no, I need to go to my little hole, you know, like I need to be in my burrow to birth now. And I did. I went back there and I stayed back there. That was great. I'm really thankful that I took the time to like sort of create the space and like put that intention into it a little bit more of like, this is a birth zone.
Yes. And then my last question regarding birth before we move on to our other topics. Can you tell us all about what makes home birth great? What were you able to experience that only because you were at home?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Honestly, so much. Well, first I would say I think the benefit to hospital birth and possibly the only benefit in my mind, aside from like, I get that there's the benefit if anything goes wrong when you're in hospital, but from all the research that I've done, it is much more likely that things will go wrong because you're in hospital. And if anything goes wrong at a home birth, you can get to a hospital in the same amount of time as they would be prepping you for OR in hospital, and they'll prep you in the friggin' ambulance and then you'll get there. You'll be fine, right? But so aside from that, I think that the only pro to being in hospital is the lack of prep. Like, you don't have to prepare a space in a room and all that kind of stuff. You can kind of just show up and do your thing. However, it always stalls labor when you show up to a hospital with the lights and you're not comfortable, you're not at home, there's strangers walking in and out, and you're literally like butt naked and like moaning. So when you're home, for one, you can really create a space that feels to you safe and positive and encouraging and beautiful, because truly I think the key to a smooth and enjoyable labor is the ability to release and to relax and to release all fear. And a lot of people have fear around hospitals, understandably, and a lot of people can't relax around strangers with their butt in the air, understandably. So being able to create a space that truly, truly feels like, oh, I feel so at peace here, really helps when you are doing the work of like releasing through every contraction, because it is truly work. It is the biggest like mental game that I have ever played. And I found that with this birth, like, that was the only, like it was so beautiful and so enjoyable being at home. I hung out, I ate snacks, I had watermelon, I was out in the garden, I hung onto a tree while I labored for a bit. And I just, very much like, this is natural. This is like so much of my peaceful thoughts come from like, I am part of nature. This is natural. My body is made to do this. Like, my body is naturally made to open wide enough for a baby to pass through. I tore with my first. My main goal was to not tear, at least not like enough to need stitches with my second. And I didn't. I like barely got a tiny little superficial like thing, and it healed in like 2 days, you know? And so for me, a lot of my peace came from like, I am one with nature. Like, my body is totally made to do this, like made to open up. And being able to go out and be in nature really, really helped with that for me. Being able to like not have to rush, like when labor starts and you're starting to feel these contractions, if you're suddenly like, oh, gotta get my bag, gotta pack, gotta get like get in the car, whatever, that will so naturally stall labor. And not only that, but like early labor, I think you really want to try and just like not think about it. Like for as long as you can go through contractions without having to manage through them or without having to use all the mental and physical tools in your at your disposal, the better. So the more that you can just be like, I'm cutting up a watermelon and having a contraction. Ooh, okay, cool. I'm going to hang out with my, you know what I mean? Just go about normal life, the better. And when you know that you have to go to a hospital, there's this like, oh, when should we go? Is it time? We don't want to give birth in the car. Like this kind of stress that you feel around it. And that stress not only stalls labor, but it also creates tension in your body and fear, which will create more pain. It just will. When you don't have that stress hanging over you, when everyone's coming to you, everyone's there to serve you. you don't have the added stress of having to think about any of that. And then not only that, but after giving birth, oh my God, the difference between, well, particularly my first, I was with him for 3 hours and then he was life-flighted to another island because we live on the big island of Hawaii, right? And there is not a NICU here.
Oh, that's so ironic.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Yeah. And on the big island as well. But it's quite rural and whatever. There isn't a NICU. So they have like, if any babies are born 34 weeks or before, they pretty much just automatically send them to NICU, especially boys. Boys' lungs don't develop till 35 weeks. Apparently, girls' lungs develop at like 33 or 34 weeks. And so even though he was born totally healthy, totally fine, breathing great, whatever, they said we still have to send him to NICU. And so I actually didn't get to NICU till 2.5 days later, which was horrific. And then we spent 2 weeks there in NICU, and they don't have a bed for you in the same room. They don't have any preparations for recovering moms at all. Kendreas wheelchaired me around the whole time, which was amazing, but I saw so many moms limping up and down the hallway to go to the bathroom and all kinds. So sad. And so that, as post for postpartum, is also just like a recipe for disaster. And obviously that's not the case for many women. You give birth in the hospital, you go home a day or two later, but even still, your first hours with your baby are full of like, you're getting woken up every hour or so by nurses coming to check on you and check on the baby and do all these things, which ultimately don't really need to be done like in that way at that time. And then you have to pack up and go home and then adjust to being home. You're moving around a ton. I literally went from birthed in the tub. I sat in there for a while and then I got out to the bed right next to the tub until... delivered placenta in the tub, got out, bed next to the tub, hung out, did my first nursing and everything. Placenta stayed attached for a really long time. And then we actually burnt the placenta with candles because I guess it's like a traditional thing they do in like South America, et cetera. And that's where my midwife trained. And it was just kind of like a holy moment of it. It took a long time,
I was gonna say that.
It was way longer than expected, but that was a really sweet moment. And then I went from there. I got into my herbal bath, which my sister prepped for me, which was dope. And Zimri came in there with me for a little bit. I was in there for like 20 minutes. And while I was in there, after Zimri came in, they took Zimri and they did the little checks they needed to do. And by the time I came out of the bath, I just got into my bed, which was clean and ready. They handed me Zimri back. I stayed freaking half naked. Zimri just nursed on me. And we went into postpartum, you know? And so he went straight from being birthed very calmly, dim room, no bright lights. He wasn't whisked away from me immediately or anything, straight from there to like our bed. And he slept there for he's in our room napping now. He's been very calm and found it very easy, I think, to adjust to life in the world because he didn't have like an intense arrival with a lot of shifts and changes and different things. Like in hospital, they're like, you can't fall asleep with your baby on you. You can't.
Oh my God.
And it's just so unnatural. And so even with Zimri, I was like, I realized everyone was starting to leave. It was like hours later. We had a birthday cake that my niece made for us. Like she made a little chocolate cake with the help of my sister. And that was really sweet. We all shared it together. And then we had soup that I had made and put in the freezer. Like we, you know, gorgeous like chicken bone broth soup, like all of those things. You can't do that in hospital. So that whole process was really beautiful. The transitional process from birth into like the postpartum like cocoon. And then as people were leaving, I realized like I'm cut out. I don't know what to do. I haven't done a newborn baby like this before. He was in NICU. He had nurses around. We were being told what to do. He was attached to wires and like whatever else. And I was like, Beth, what do I do? Where does he sleep? How do I do this? And she was like, oh, you haven't. Okay, let me talk to you. My sister. This is my sister. Okay. And so she was just like, just do this. Put him right in here. Just wrap him up. He's totally fine. He can sleep on you. Prop your arms up on a couple pillows. He'll be safe right there as you lean back. Like, he can nurse. And like, I, because I hadn't done any of that because I was in hospital before. And so he did. He just like slept kind of on me and sometimes next to me as well. And he slept fine right next to me because he felt comfortable. It's where he'd been from the moment that he was born, you know? I really think it made a big difference in his temperament compared to my first son's. First son, very, very sweet, really chill baby in general, could not go to sleep on his own. Definite separation anxiety, which you might not always have from a regular hospital birth, but there's still some like interventions in those early hours, the first day or so. And some like, yeah, just the travel between places when you're a super newborn. Like Zimri had none of that. He didn't cry. Like, he just was at peace, you know, and was undisturbed. And I think that that has really, like, just continued. I mean, he cries now. He's a freaking baby.
Of course.
You know, like, that.
Yeah, like, he's moved transition into the earth world.
Yeah. Yeah, it was such a peaceful transition. And like,
yeah. And then from there,
you run into the different kind of womb. You know what I mean? It's still dim and dark and cozy and warm and peaceful and everything. And mom's right there. Sorry, that was so long-winded. But I just really like, I've thought about it a lot, about the differences between the hospital birth and the home birth. And I'm not against hospital births. Like, you can still have a beautiful birth experience in the hospital, especially if you prepare for it well, especially if you have support. And it's okay if you don't want a home birth. Like, that is okay. But I think it's wise to understand the benefits and differences and to be able to create as much as you can the kind of safety and the cocoon environment. And I think a big part of that is remembering that, like, the hospital ultimately is there to serve you. Like, they may, like, you can do what you want. You can tell them what to do. You can tell them, I don't want to push. You can tell them, I don't want to do that intervention yet. What happens if we wait? And I may come a time with an extreme circumstance that they're like, liability wise, we won't, we refuse this, or we'd have to discharge something. But they're not going to discharge you when you're pushing out a baby. I'm sorry. And they cannot force you into something that you don't want to do. So if you're like, I don't want anybody, like, you can tell them to not do the checks on you. I can't remember what they call it. You can tell them postpartum to come in and check on you, like, all do all the checks all at once, so they're not coming in like every hour or whatever. Point being, if you're going to birth in the hospital, do so, but go in prepared and go in confident that this is your birth still. Mm-hmm. And that, yes, they're there to help you. The nurses that I had in my first birth were amazing.
Nurses are angels.
They're amazing. Honestly, the doctor, the OB, I could give two hoots about him. He was making awkward jokes the whole time and just like not getting the vibe. But the nurses were amazing and they are on your side. And you don't have to be scared, but you should be confident in like, this is your birth experience. And like, as much as you can, make it the experience that you want it to be.
I completely agree. And something that I'm sure you've perhaps experienced is anytime I talk about my desire to have like an HVAC or when I was pregnant and wanted to have a home birth, people were very defensive about their hospital birth. I'm like, I'm not telling you to have a home birth.
Right.
I'm telling you I'm having a home birth. I love right. hospital birth.
Right. My experience does not negate yours.
Yeah.
Like my value, like just like, you know, you can't increase your value by tearing somebody else down. Like you can't, like my desires are not validated more so by, like, I'm not invalidating your desires to validate mine.
Yeah,
both are fine. Although it's wise to understand the benefits and risks of both. And having looked a lot into it, I think objectively, there's a lot more benefits to home birth. I think the statistics show that as hospital births have increased, so have birth complications, maternal death, infant death, all kinds of sad things that we don't need to go into, because I can really get on a high horse about that, or a soapbox about that if I want. It doesn't mean that you're bad if you choose that. Sometimes you can't, like, I couldn't afford a home birth with my first. I couldn't have done it if I wanted. Even if I had chosen a home birth, he was born at 34 weeks. We couldn't have birthed at home.
Yeah.
Like, I've experienced that side of things, because I've had, like, when I was telling my birth story of my first, I've had commenters. I can't believe that someone like you that's holistic would go to a freaking hospital and have them walk.
On both,
I can't, like,
be from both sides,
you know. Yeah, there's just, we do the best that we can with what's at our disposal, with the information that we have, with the tools and the resources that we have. Just do the best that you can. Baby's born, even if it's a C-section, it's still a birth and it's still beautiful. You still fought and struggled and brought your baby's soul into this world. It's still valid, you know.
Yeah, thanks for speaking life into me. Last question about birth.
Very proud of you.
Did you have a raw placenta smoothie?
I didn't, actually. Yeah. I didn't. But I do have my placenta frozen in the freezer. And every now and again, I'm looking for, like, meat for dinner. And I'm like, what's this? Oh, it's my placenta. No, I didn't. And I still am like, what do I do with this? Interestingly, the research that I've done seems to show that it's not like magical. As some people say, although I think it is natural to eat your placenta, like a lot of people do, a lot of animals do. Like, I don't think there's anything wrong with it or weird. I talked to my midwife a lot about it and did some research, and she was like, yeah, ultimately, hopefully, all the nutrients in it go to your baby, and they should. And then you're left with, like, iron and some minerals and things like that, which is great. But you can also get it in other ways. You can eat beef liver, you can whatever. But you're extra cool if you do eat your placenta. So dope. I was not that cool at the time. I was like, I'm just not feeling it.
Okay.
But I have been thinking about dehydrating it and encapsulating it, partly just for the process of it. My midwife was like, you can do it at home. Just throw it in your oven, grind that shit up, and put it in some capsules. So I'm interested in that. I think if I lived somewhere different that felt more like a permanent home space, I would bury it.
Yeah.
My mom did that often. She did it. She buried my placenta in Cornwall in England, and I blame her for the fact that I am so connected to that place. And no matter where I'm at, I live in Hawaii, and all I can think about is moving back to rainy old England is probably because my placenta is buried there. I really like that. Like, I think there's so many beautiful traditions with the placenta. My midwives did make a print of it, though. They flopped it onto some paper. Bloop! And they got a really cool print, though, of, like, the tree of life, you know, the veins that all go up through it. I hope I know where that is, actually.
Oh, you don't already have it framed?
No, I don't, because I'm like that, Susie. It's hanging out. Stuff. Last I knew, it was stuffed into my watercolor, like, book of pages, along with, like, things my son's painted on and whatever else. And if I don't know better, like, I could think that perhaps he... What am I trying to say? And if I don't move it quickly, he'll probably just paint over it. Like, honestly, I need to do something with the thing.
Okay. Now, I have a quick problem, and that problem is exactly what I anticipated, that I had so much fun talking to you about birth, that it's now an hour and a half, and I didn't get to any of the other questions that I wanted to talk to you about. Would you be open to a part two? I would really like to have a part two with you. I think those Christian conversations are very important. That I want to have with you.
I would love that. It's so fun to talk to you, honestly. And, like, I had a feeling, this always happens. This is the danger of starting out with birth.
I should have known better.
Yeah, I would love to come back and talk more about all those things, because I think that they're really valuable and bring so much extra, like, nuance to stuff. And, like, people hear everyone talking about birth. We have some other cool things to talk about too.
I deeply appreciate that. I know we're going to have another great conversation. I'm going to immediately send you a follow-up email so we get it on the calendar and we don't forget.
Yes, immediately.
And now that we know our time zones, it won't be an issue.
I hope you enjoyed the wisdom, knowledge, and camaraderie that was shared today. If you enjoy this podcast and hanging out every week, make sure to subscribe to this show so that you never miss an episode. And if you really want to make my heart sing with joy, take a couple of minutes today to rate and review this show. In doing this, you're exposing the show to others that are just like you and just like me and would benefit from the information shared here as well. If we're not already connected, you can follow me on Instagram at woowoobestie_Suzie, S-U-Z-Y, where I share more about my plant magic journey, spirituality, and knowledge about essential oils. I've also linked our Woo Woo Bestie Facebook group below if you're not already a part of it. It's a safe space for seekers of wisdom and those anywhere on their journey of spirituality. Ask your questions, share your moon rituals, learn from the collective wisdom of the Woo Woo community. All are welcome, and I would love to see you there. I hope that you have the best week ever. Until next time.